Welcome to the AquariMax Audio Show with Russ and Kelly. We provide information on all kinds of aquarium-related topics.
This is episode 44, recorded January 10th, 2011.
Greetings, everyone.
Good evening. We're back. So, Russ, what kind of fishy updates do you want to tell us about this week?
Well, when I took our betta home for vacation, I left his tank at work. It's a planted tank, and I just left it there, and I came in once during the vacation to do a little maintenance on it. But other than that, I just kind of left it alone. Now, one interesting thing is that there used to be amphipods in that tank, and then I put the betta in there, and then I didn't see amphipods. And he's been in there for over a year now. Maybe, I'm not sure exactly how long, but over a year. And I haven't seen a single amphipod that whole time. But then
he ate them all.
Or so I thought. But then I came back from vacation to put him in, and the amphipods had been eating the Java moss and so on, and proliferating and growing in the tank, and there were quite a few in there. Not tons of them, but, you know, you could see them. They were swimming around.
More than you thought were still in the tank.
More than I thought they were still in the tank, and I'm sure they were quite small when I left. They do grow pretty fast. But it was interesting to see. I had sort of assumed that he had wiped out the population or reduced it to such small numbers that they wouldn't be able to reproduce, but apparently that's not the case. He's just constantly sort of harvesting them and keeping them in hiding. And once he was gone, when the cat's away, the mice shall play sort of thing happened. And of course, I put him back in, and now you can't see a single amphipod. But I shall not be deceived. I know that there are some in there somewhere, hiding and biding their time.
But it is nice to know that betas are so effective at keeping down the amphipods.
Yes, and I'm sure he had a party eating those amphipods
his own
like popcorn.
Thanksgiving feast.
Exactly.
Nice fat belly.
Okay.
Now, we had an interesting experience this week with our rainbow fish.
Yes. As I've mentioned before, we have some neon dwarf rainbows. I've mentioned it many times because we have a lot of fry that we're raising from a spawn that I rescued. Well, rainbows, at least this species of rainbow and quite a few others, tend to spawn very frequently. Fairly small spawns, but they're very, very frequent. And I've noticed that our rainbows tend to spawn as soon as their light comes on. It's on a timer. Comes on in the morning. We're in a basement, and the aquarium is far away from the sole window in the room, so the light is basically dependent on that timer. And when that comes on, they start to spawn. And the other day, I had just finished exercising. It's in the same room where we do exercising. So I was doing some stretches and looking up into the aquarium, and I saw that they were spawning. And I'd seen them gathering around the plants, the male, and kind of pushing the female up against the plants, and they're doing their little shaky dance. I've seen that many times. But I had never actually seen the egg release of rainbow fish. So, as I was watching, this time I saw a release of eggs. There were probably about 20 in this little cloud of eggs they released. Not a very big cloud, but remember, their eggs are fairly large and they spawn frequently, so they have small spawns. But the neat thing was that very soon after that cloud of eggs was released into the water, I noticed little threads hanging from them, very short threads. But this is the crazy thing. I had noticed that the eggs were often attached to plants by threads. When I look in there, I look in there almost every day, there are new eggs attached to the plants, but often by small threads. But these tiny threads, when I first noticed them, they were probably a millimeter or two long, no longer than that. But as the eggs sat in the water and began to sink a little bit, these extended, the threads extended, just like a parachute or
like a spider
ballooning with its silk. It was really crazy to see. And they did that, and then they started moving a little bit more in the current, and some of them caught onto the plants, and then the fish, of course, swam by and took care of the rest of them. But some of them had attached to the plants. That was a fascinating thing to see. I had never seen it, so that was fun.
It was very cool.
I'm thinking about trying to catch that on film sometime, because I know when the light comes on, so maybe during the weekend I'll just sit there with the camera and see if I can catch it on film. That'd be fun.
And then we could put it up on the resources page.
Yeah, if you don't mind the scratches in the glass, because it's a very old third-hand tank that was given to me, so I can't do a whole lot about that. But anyway, I'm very grateful for it, by the way.
So along the lines of rainbow fish spawning, we took a trip this weekend to the craft store and got some nice Hunter Green 100% acrylic yarn. And what did you do with it?
I made a spawning mop. It had been a long time since I'd made a spawning mop, because a lot of the fish that I have spawned in the last several years either didn't require one or did fine without one or whatever. So I hadn't made one in a while. So I looked up a website to refresh my memory, and I'll put that on the resources page. But it's really easy to make a nice one.
So he's going to tell you how to do it.
Yeah, and this website's sort of, I'm basing this off the website's instructions, but you get one piece of the yarn, maybe 8 or so inches long, cut it off, and then you set it along the top of a rectangular flat object. I used a book. I think on the website it was a lid of a sweater box style container, like one you might use for breeding killifish. But I used a book, and then perpendicular to that first piece of yarn you cut off, you wind the yarn around that piece and around the book or other rectangular object 45 times, and then you tie it off using that first piece. Tie it off nice and tightly with a couple of knots. And then on the opposite side of the book or rectangular object, you cut through the yarn, and you've got a spawning mop. And then, to make it float, if you want a floating one, which I do for my rainbow fish, because they always spawn near the surface of the water. They are neon dwarf rainbow fishes, by the way. Fish. Excuse me, by the way. Anyway, to make it float, you can either use a cork, or you can use a piece of styrofoam. So, when at the same craft store, a different craft store somewhere, we got little balls of styrofoam. And I used a rubber band to attach the ball of styrofoam to the spawning mop, and sure enough, the next day I noticed eggs sitting on there. We're going to have to figure out something to do with all these eggs, because we have a lot.
A lot of eggs.
More than I know what to do with. Way more than I have space to raise. But we'll see. The fry...
Perhaps more on that in a future episode.
Yeah, we may talk about that. But the fry are growing and getting bigger and looking like little rainbow fish. It'll be neat to see. Pretty soon I'll be able to put them with the adults.
Very good. Well, this week we have 2 emails! Hooray!
Hey, thank you for responding to the call.
Thank you for writing in. Our first email is from our wonderful, loyal listener, Rob. Hello, Rob! And I'm just going to kind of paraphrase a few things here. He sends his compliments on the Paludarium episode, so thank you very much.
I'm glad you didn't rag on me for messing up the spelling in the original release. I corrected it since, but it wasn't that I didn't know how to spell. It was a typo, but sorry, folks.
He was actually wondering if we had some more pictures of our setups, so we will try to get some of those on the resource page.
Yeah, I actually sent an email about that, because somehow in the email originally I thought you meant the setup of the Lava Rock Paludarium, or you did mean that, but you also referred to the other ones, and I missed that you referred to some of my other setups, so I'll try to put some photos of our other setups up. Sorry I misunderstood your original email.
So we can get pictures of our various tank setups up soon. And he paid a visit to the Riparium Supply website that we had referenced in that episode and thought it was very good and interesting. So if you guys haven't been over there yet, you should go give it a look. This isn't a commercial, because it's not trying to sell you anything. It is, however, the part where we shamelessly encourage you to be a part of the Aquarimax audio show by calling and leaving a message any time of the day or night at 801-477-0629. If you don't want to actually talk, but you do have a comment or question, you can just send us an email to info@aquarimax.com. There. That wasn't so painful now, was it? All right, we're back, and we're going to continue talking about Robert's email. He had a question about pothos, putting pothos cuttings to grow them like how we were talking about, in his turtle tank. So, he says, I could attach them to my turtle dock and let the runs grow into the water. I'm curious, do you think that it would grow hydroponically in pure water? Was that the plant that you used in your paludarium? And he also wanted to know if the pothos could be harmful if it was ingested by the turtle. So you want to fill us in on some of that info?
Yes, I did respond to Rob in the email about these things, but I am now responding to the rest of you in case you're interested in that. This plant, which has a million names, it's called pothos, porthos, devil's ivy, Solomon's ivy. It's also known as philodendron erroneously. It's not really a philodendron, but looks a lot like one. It's got other names too. Syndapsis is another one. Anyway, this plant does grow in just water. Of course, water with nutrients in it, but I have grown it in jars where it's survived, and not only survived, but it has thriven for years.
You say thriven?
I just did. That's technically the correct past participle of the verb to thrive. Yeah. Thrived is a possible, it's the past form, the simple past form. and thriven
is
the
This is his grammar teacher side coming out.
Okay. But yes, it does thrive in water. The root doesn't suffer root rot or anything in those situations. And it is indeed the plant that we used in our paludarium. And it is recommended on several websites that you can grow a pothos plant in a pot, in soil, on top of an aquarium, and let some of the stems go down into the aquarium water.
So, like, through the bottom of the pot, the hole in the bottom of the pot, you mean?
No, just since it's a vine sort of plant, you let some of those stems dip down, and they will root in the water, in addition to the roots that are in the pot, and they will suck up nutrients there, and taking advantage of the atmospheric CO2. And so they're a good way to help reduce nutrients in your water, nutrient export, basically. But you mentioned you were worried that that could be harmful if ingested by the turtles, and it could be. I have read that it does have toxins in it, and that when you are rooting it in your aquarium, if you cut it to root in the aquarium, you should let it kind of scarify and heal over there, and then start rooting before you put it in, because juices from the actual plant can hurt animals, and so I'm worried that it could be toxic to turtles. So you'd have to have some way to...
So perhaps more turtle-intensive research is in order before planting the pothos.
Either that or making some way that the roots can get into the water in an area of the tank where the turtles can't. Something like that. Sort of fencing off an area that the roots can get down to but the turtles can't get to the roots would be another way to do it, I think.
Okay.
Also we should mention...
Oh, yes. Rob has... a blog. It's a Star Trek blog, yes?
Yes.
Yes, and he has... we had it on our site from when he sent his stuff in, and he's updated the link to that. So if anybody's jumping from Fish to Star Trek, it's now www.deepspacerob.com. So, and we put that up too, so we've changed it on the website.
Yeah, on episode 39 resources page, it's now corrected.
So, thanks very much, Rob, for your email. And let's see, our next email is from Brian. I don't think we've heard from Brian yet, have we?
I don't remember. We may have.
Okay, well, if we haven't, welcome and thank you for sending in an email. And if we have, thanks for sending in an email, too. some of Brian's email we're going to talk about today, and some of it we will talk about in a future podcast. He has some specific requests for things to us to go over when we do our full review of the Everclean aqua filter.
And those are some good points to bring up.
They were
so
very
we'll
good
try
questions.
To address those.
And then he was actually wondering if we had used some products that Russ is going to talk about. He was wondering.
Okay. It says, have you used the nitrate phosphate reducing bio pellets? I haven't done that. That would be interesting to see. If any of you have used nitrate or phosphate-reducing bio pellets, why don't you send us an email or give us a call and let us know what you think about them. And another product he mentions here, Brightwell Aquatics Microbacter 7. said he's been using it for 3 months now, and he's sold. The water quality in his tank is significantly easier to maintain since he started using it. So, sounds like a good product. I haven't tried it. I have used some bacterial additive products, but not that particular one. So,
perhaps we could get a hold of some and try it out. And
yeah, that would be a good idea.
Give a more thorough review of that, too.
Yeah, I really feel like there's a lot of variety in the claims and the efficacy of such products, so that would be good to review.
Okay, so yeah, we can try and get a hold of some of those products and see what we think and let you guys know. So thanks for the suggestion.
Yeah, and if any of the listeners out there have tried Microbacter 7 or other bacterial additive products and you have something positive, negative, or inconclusive, or neutral to say about them, please let us know. We'd be interested in finding that out, too. And Brian also had a cool suggestion about our website, and we appreciate that a lot, and we like to look into that. It's very intriguing. So hopefully the rest of you, even though you don't know what he was talking about,
it's the mystery.
Yeah, you'll be benefiting from that in the near future, we hope, and so will we. So now it's time to hit the anecdote of the episode.
Anecdote of the episode. Does that sounds like it needs like a theme song to introduce it.
We need to get some good theme music for that, huh? We don't have any now. Just pretend you're listening to some cool. That's copyrighted.
Anecdote.
No, that's copyrighted. We can't even do that.
No, yeah, we can because it counts as spoof.
I don't know if fair use covers that or not. Maybe.
Sure it does.
You didn't do. You did 30% or less of the song, huh?
There
probably
you go.
Okay.
Kay.
But, okay. What was I talking about? Okay. The anecdote. Okay. Picture this. I was 6 years old, and I found out my neighbor had an Oscar. And that she fed it earthworms. We lived in Washington State at the time, and so earthworms were always outside almost all the time, crawling around on the sidewalks, because it almost never stops raining there. So, you have this perpetual
moving sidewalk?
Well, not quite that bad, but this perpetual supply of earthworms. And I suppose that she was either not worried about or didn't know about the pesticide issues that could arise with collecting earthworms out on sidewalks. And so, she would feed her Oscar, these worms. And as soon as I found that out, I remember going out to collect all these worms and bringing them to her house every time I could, and knocking on her door and on the way home from school, because she just lived up the street from me on the way home from school. And sometimes she wasn't there and whatnot, but when she was usually pretty good about it. But I remember one day, she was outside.
She would let me come in and feed the fish?
Yeah, yeah, and she would let me come in and watch the fish. She probably had like a 60-gallon tank in her living room or something, just a solitary Oscar in there that was her pet. And, excuse me. So, one day, I had found a lot of worms, and I saw her out in her front yard, and I ran up at her door and just started opening the door myself to get in there, and she looked at me and she kind of said, well, maybe you should wait for me to open the door for you. But I thought it was just kind of illustrative of my great enthusiasm for all things piscine and aquarium related, even at such a tender age.
Even worms.
And worms, I suppose, too. Although, if I have to pick one or the other,
well, yeah,
fish. But obviously, you know, culturing worms as I do, I've maintained...
It's because you love fish that you culture worms.
Right, but I have maintained an affinity of sorts for worms as well. Yeah. But anyway, I started early. I started a couple years before that when I was 4 with an ill-fated goldfish. But it has never waned. In fact, it has burgeoned and grown stronger. So there you go. Fish forever, folks. And I think that just about wraps it up for today, does it not?
I think so.
Okay.
We'll see you next time.
Thank you for listening to this edition of the Aquarimax Audio Show. For additional episodes, please visit aquarimax.com. For comments and or questions that may be featured on an upcoming podcast, leave a message at 801-477-0629 or email us at info@aquarimax.com.